welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller. That's when you say...
Oh, we're starting the show now?
Yeah, we are.
Hello.
What would you say your name is?
What do you do here, exactly?
Hi, I'm Scott. I'm back.
Yes, I know. Very excited to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's beautiful. I love the new set. This is amazing. How long has this been happening?
A couple weeks.
2-3 months,
it's
actually.
Months, weeks. It's awesome.
Yeah. My life's a blur, so I don't know. Dan Fernandez, by the way, before we get...
I'm thrilled to be here.
And you are up here, actually, for a story. MVP
it's
Summit.
The MVP Summit, right?
That's right.
It's a little club that we have.
Yeah.
And we've got, like, I don't know, a couple thousand, 2,400?
A few thousand, yeah.
2,400 MVPs all come up. And I have, because I work for the Web Platform and Tools team, and I'm the kind of the community guy for Web Platform and Tools, helped organize the ASP.NET MVP Summit, that portion of the summit. So ASP.NET, IIS, and then also the ASP Insiders. So we have we actually had a post-summit day. We had so much content that we did a full day on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then we had another whole day, and we did 8 to 5, and actually they're still going. Over in Redmond Town Center.
So there's kind of three factions within there. Are there different MVPs for ASP.NET, the MVC guys, and the Web Matrix, or how's that all work?
Good question. So we've got ASP.NET MVPs that are application developers, and then we've got IIS MVPs that usually work for hosters and mini clouds and stuff like that. So there is a kind of a web platform and tools track. And then there are little mini tracks for, like, the IIS guys. So, like, during the MVC talk that Phil was giving, we had the IIS guys go off and talk about, you know, other things in IIS. So they got, you know, like 4 or 5 hours of their own private section. Mm. And then they came back in when the more pertinent stuff happened that everyone wants to know.
Okay. And a lot of this stuff was under NDA. And, you know, this is...
Yeah, yeah.
This
is Phil Hack here.
Yes.
He actually stays in Redmond, right? And I live in Portland.
Right.
Phil is under the influence of the Redmond Reality Distortion Field.
Which I love.
Which you are very likely
familiar
with. Yes.
100% of our customers are using all Windows Stack.
Right. And you're super excited about that.
Absolutely.
So he was... Basically, the first part of our talk was done where Phil would say something like, you know, this takeaway...
Takeaway we hope to see is increased customer satisfaction with this effort.
I would then translate that to, like, normal human speak. And of course, hope you like it. Yeah, we had the whole part was sprinkled with Microsoft-isms, microspeak, as Raymond Chen calls it.
Mm.
If you go to Raymond Chen's blog, he has a category called microspeak. He has glossaries of Microsoft-isms,
of which there are many.
There are, in fact, many.
So, moving right along.
Indeed.
Other stories. Obviously, thanks for MEPs for not tweeting our secrets, because there's a lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen any bad ones yet. I know Mary Jo was tracking. She has a tracker.
Yeah, but I think it's funny that there are, like, journalists that their job is to wait for something to leak out of the MVPs.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that nice?
Yeah. It went okay. We didn't have any problems.
Yeah. So, speaking of which, Rob Tiffany talked about the new change, Windows Phone 7 developers, they pay $99 for the to get in the marketplace. What you can do now, before there was a restriction, you could only do 5 free apps and you could do unlimited paid. Now they changed it, 100 free apps, still get unlimited paid. So...
Cool.
So this is cool for I don't know what applications
if you're gonna make, like, Swiss Army knife applications and you're gonna go and make a compass and a ruler and this and kind of stuff. Plus, this opens it up for Fart Rock Band that I was working on.
Oh yeah, well, I was building 3 versions of Hansel Tracker,
it's a stalking application.
It kind of is. Yeah, I have 1,000 users and I'm really excited. It's basically like Where's Scott in the.
I've actually already written Hansel Tracker. Yeah, it's called Facebook.
Oh, okay. Are you stalking him too?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm here. I just don't really have anything to add to the show.
I checked in on Foursquare and he showed up. I was like, hey, nice to see you, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going? I checked into your room too. So I think this is cool. I know some developers, like Adam Nathan, had, like, he's doing 99 free apps or so, like 101 apps, and he's actually made them paid because that way it'd be free.
Because of this limit.
Yeah, exactly right. So Open Source Fest at Mix 11. So Mix 11's looking to be huge. It's Monday, the first day, I think it's the day before the conference starts.
Yep, that's right, Monday
that evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just the time, somewhere in the evening. It doesn't, I think, actually say the time.
6 p.m. to 9 p.m.
6 to 9 p.m. It doesn't
Pacific
actually say
Standard
that.
Time.
Las Vegas time.
Pacific, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. What's happening? You worked it up.
Something's happening in Las Vegas.
Huge. Open Source Fest.
Festival.
Yes. So you go there, there's going to be food, drinks, you get to mingle, and there's going to be, I think, winners. For people to show off their open source apps, so
and it's
kind of like a science fair.
To all attendees,
right? Exactly.
Regardless
it's an open source science fair.
Yeah. Open source science fair.
Yeah. So you show up, you bring your laptop, and you get a showcase to show your project. Here's what I've got. Here's what I'm building. Maybe I put it in NuGet, and I want to make it available to people.
Do you get paid by the number of times you mention NuGet?
Actually, the more times I make it, I get candy each time I say NuGet.
Nice. So I think this will be cool. Anybody attending Mix should definitely check this out. So, Windows Phone Toolkit, February release.
Speaking of? Speaking of what?
Of NuGet.
It's been...
NuGetified.
Yes!
The password is...
The password is rhubarb.
Exactly. Yeah, so Windows Phone Toolkit is out, and one of the ways that you can get that toolkit in your project and some of the new refreshed controls, like the performance progress bar and the long list bug fixes and stuff, you can get them in NuGet. You say right-click on your references, and you say add library reference, because NuGet wants to make open source as easy as add reference.
Mm-hmm. So when you do that, it automatically updates or it downloads one time?
Good question. So the idea is if you want to get an open source application now, right, you go and bingle it, and then you... I'm trying that now. It might work.
Sure.
Google it with Bing, which is the thing we did before.
Yeah.
So you go and find it. You read some stuff. You look for the link. You download the zip file. You unzip it. You figure out where you're going to put it. This guy puts it in Lib. This guy puts it somewhere else.
Figure out where the license is. Am I allowed to use this?
Which version? Is it the bin? Is it the source? Do I have to recompile it myself?
Where do you keep
it? It has two dependencies.
Exactly. Oh, no, by the way, don't forget Log4Net. That experience is dozens of speed bumps on the way to simply using it. So now, with NuGet, you can say add library reference. We'll make an OData call to NuGet.org, which is this great Orchard-based gallery. And Orchard's another open source project. We'll bring it down. It's got a manifest. It knows what it needs. It'll grab any dependencies, unzip it, put it in a packages folder, keep track of its version, add the reference, and update web configs if you're a web application, get all sorts of other stuff. Plus, there's an updates button. So it'll go and it'll get the latest stuff as well.
And how much do we have to pay for this?
$19.95.
No, I love
it. It's actually free.
It's actually free.
This is actually cool.
The updates is very nice, though, in all seriousness. Because you may have five libraries that you need to update.
Exactly. Plus, it's available at the command line. So there's two ways you can do this. Three ways, actually. You can go add library reference from the references dialog in Visual Studio. You can use PowerShell, because we actually have the Power Console that's inside. You can say install-package. Silverlight Toolkit and WP.
Gems-ish.
Yeah. .NET on Nails kind of a thing. And then, or there's NuGet.exe, which you can go and download manually and do it from DOS or DOS-like.
Good. Mm-hmm. I'm still running DOS.
You're still running DOS? And then you can go and do it like that. So, you know, even if you don't use Visual Studio, it's all free, and this is part of the Outer Curve Foundation. So it's a Microsoft project that Microsoft's committing to into Mercurial on Codeplex. But we've also got lots of other folks that are partners. These are developers that are committing to this project, and we're going to ship all that stuff. So NuGet's a really great example of a project that is open source, run outside of Microsoft, owned by Outer Curve, and will ship in Visual Studio at some point, even with contributions from the public.
Cool. So you just gave a good example of NuGet, and then this is the Windows Phone Toolkit, which has been NuGetified.
And this is important because it extends their reach.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Sure.
So if you do you have any open source projects?
I do not, no. No, I'm a proprietary closed kind of guy.
Proprietary, only closed source.
Yeah, it's the only way to make money.
What kind of libraries does Jeff Coding for Fun do that we should get in here?
We actually have a Coding for Fun phone toolkit. And in fact, some of the things that we had in there were we would probably want to look at Jeff Wilcox's update to the performance progress bar. Mm-hmm. We made it just bindable, right? So I think there's some stuff where maybe we don't need it anymore, and that's one of the things that Clint is looking at. I think it was actually in the top 10 or so. In downloads on Codeplex.
See, that'd be great. Another example would be like the Wii Remote. I can go looking for it, or I can type in install package, WII, tab, autocomplete, and I get the Wii Remote Lib. So Brian Peek, get on that.
You have to, like, next time you see him, pretend you don't know him, by
yes,
the way.
Every time I meet Brian Peake, I say, oh, it's nice to meet you.
Which is classic. Wordly and WordNet. So this is Code Project. You want to talk about this one? You want me to talk?
No, go for it. You're doing a great job. You're very zygomorphic. Yeah.
Oh, like, which means?
As far as I know, it could be a racial slur. I'm sorry. I don't even know what zygomorphic.
I think it's changing a Zagnut bar into a payday.
Okay, all right. I was going to say you're being zygomorphic by not nougatifying your project, which is myopic.
My mom already can't understand our show. Don't toy with her.
I can't wait till we do the German and Latvian versions.
Just the zygomatic process.
So what this is, WordNet is an application that's actually done by, I think it's Princeton. They had this library of words, definitions, and all this. This application is an open source app that shows how to use that dictionary and easily do what do they call this?
Autocomplete drop down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I saw one of these in like 1994 in QuickBooks, and I thought my brain was going to explode.
Oh, yeah?
Remember the very first time you saw an autocomplete drop down? Maybe that's only a geek thing as a programmer. You're looking at me like,
well,
I remember the first time I started typing. Oh, it knows
IntelliSense,
what I want.
Pretty awesome.
IntelliSense was one of those things.
This is a great implementation of that Alan Burkhart did. He took the WordNet stuff from Princeton and then created Wordly.
Yeah, so check out the code. And the thing that I'd say is just using this engine, even if people aren't interested in how the app works, I could definitely see a lot of people wanting just that, how to use that library for their Windows Phone 7 apps.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just a dictionary.
Scrabble knockoff,
Words with Friends, all those kind of things.
Yep.
So,
I'm thinking about Words with Enemies.
Actually, shouldn't that be it?
Because I don't want to talk to these people.
And it's just like
I want to crush them with my vocabulary.
It should only be like you can only hate on them, so it's like ways to hate on them. Like, so like you're being zygomorphic, Scott.
Yeah. We need to really check on what that means.
Steve Marks. Yeah, really. Yeah, we're going to be in trouble.
We're going to beep that out.
Yep.
Oh, it's going to be hilarious if we have to. Okay. automatic Azure deployments.
Yeah, straight from Team Build.
Yes.
So you can, you know, a lot of people want to set up maybe a continuous integration environment for their Azure deployment. So I check in some code, build it, see it running in the cloud, maybe run some tests against it, and this is an article that tells you how to do this. Now, the one thing you want to be careful about, of course, is that if you're deploying your Azure app, maybe to a test environment, you're paying for that Azure app. So what you may want to do is you may want to set up another part of the process where you deploy your app, you run your tests, and then you, what's the name for it? You
decommission or delete the service and all that stuff.
Yeah, so that's something else that you should just be aware of. But I'm sure if you're building on Azure today, then that goes without saying.
Yeah, I think it's actually really cool, just that idea to be able to say, like, hey, I want you to load up this version of the app, make sure it can actually deploy and it doesn't have any errors, and then run our tests, like run our automated tests on it. If everything works, close and send me the email Excel spreadsheet that I can actively ignore in my inbox.
Exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So Yohai talked about flashcards.show. So it's a simple app that does flashcards. It has a matching game. The big thing they wanted to do here in version 2 is really show off what's reusable across WPF, Silverlight, and Windows Phone. So they talk about MVVM, making sure that you have the right experience for all the different targets. So if you're doing Windows Phone, you need to realize you should have a metro look and feel. So what are the things that you can do to kind of customize the environment and realize you're doing 480 by 800 as opposed to, say, a large screen or something, and in some of the other examples where you want to be more like have a fluid overflow as opposed to just having a set thing.
Mm-hmm.
So cool examples. I think people should play with this.
Cool.
For reusable.
Reading code is good.
Cross-platform code. jQuery. Now, you were talking about passwords. You gave me your password earlier, which was
nice. I did, yes. Yes, sir. I think that this is a really good example of something that we want to do all the time. We always see these kinds of things. We're always impressed by them. But actually implementing them is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, implementing them as nicely as they've done here is pretty impressive. It's one thing to go and say your password is too long or too short.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could probably all do that. But I thought this one particularly was interesting, where he says, I need 8 more characters and 2 more numbers and 1 more symbol. And by the way,
more
one
input,
of them should be lowercase.
More input.
But more input to the user, though, to make them really understand what's
and
next.
And while you're typing.
Exactly.
While you're typing, because it's using jQuerys, like you can imagine this number going 7, 6.
Five. And you're giving the user more information, you're enabling them to make a good decision.
Yeah.
And you're using both color even though red and green are poor choices of color, but also the progress bar to indicate, you know, how complete, how secure you are in your password choice, all wrapped up into a widget.
Love
which
it.
Is not in NuGet.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah. Fail. Fail. I'll just say
who it. Who is this guy? Let's get them in NuGet.
Picks of the week!
Picks of the week.
Jason Statham actually is a...
That's his
thanks.
Jason.
Yeah. So speaking of things that are not yet in NuGet, the Team Foundation server team this last week released the newest version of the Power Tools, and there's a lot of updates in here. There's an update to the one-click backup restore button that's in the TFS admin console, a couple other things, but I think what most people probably find most exciting is the Windows Shell integration. So previously we had Windows Shell integration that let you do some of the basic operations, you know, check in, check out of my code from
and that's
TFS.
What we're looking at here, right?
That's what you're looking at here. Mm-hmm. But what they've done is they've actually extended that to use a lot more of the capabilities from Team Foundation Server. So if you want to compare two files, compare two versions, if you want to shell files that you're working on, you can do that.
Shelf sets,
ooh. You can address all those straight from the shell. Now, that's one way of working with TFS from the shell. Another way that we were talking about is you can set up the SVN bridge. So there's an SVN bridge that allows you to set up TFS and put a bridge in front of it that makes your Subversion clients think that they're talking to Subversion, but really on the back end, it's TFS. So that's a CodePlex project. You can go download mm-hmm. it for free, set up the server version as opposed to setting up all the client-side repositories like the old model used to be. But then you can just go mm-hmm. from any platform that you have an SVN client on.
I've used that a lot.
Yeah.
All of my interactions with TFS have actually been through that bridge. It works great, especially if you've got a mixed office environment. We've got mm-hmm. a bunch of Windows folks. We've got a couple of holders out who want to use SVN at the command line on a Mac or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. And so that's good for the cross-platform, would be the SVN bridge. And then the other one, of course, if you're running on Windows, is and you want to get access to all the rich TFS capabilities, you want to get this one instead.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's a religious argument, whether there's like the people who like, it's got to be integrated in Visual Studio.
Mm.
And then there's it's got to be integrated in Explorer.
Yeah,
I'm square in the Explorer space, and if it's not a shell extension, I mean, everything I do is in folders. This kind of stuff
hate to
is
say
a
it, but I went from has to be in Visual Studio to the other way, has to be in Explorer. And I forgot I'm sick.
You're sick. Ew.
I am. No, I'm sorry. Scott always has one of these in his crotch. I don't know if people saw that, but he always has it handy. So this ought to burn, but oh, yeah, there we go. Can we add more shine to Brian's head, too?
The other nice thing about the shell integration is if you have people that don't work in Visual Studio or Eclipse, but they still want to check in version control,
that's
like designers.
Yeah,
you know, what if you're using Photoshop? How do you get version control with that?
That is a great point, actually, because people will just have like /design assets.
Yep.
And yeah. Cool. But I think we need to do a little more training with them, because I feel like they don't actually understand different versions. So they'll build a folder for every different version, not actually understanding that when you do a check-in, it actually has all the different.
I think it's because you can't see it. If you could change a view or go to the view menu and say group by versions, but if you can't see the version, I mean, think about that. Check in and trust me. That's
yes.
what you're saying.
Yeah, but
I don't think they even know
that, though. That's the thing where it's like, oh man, I just deleted that folder. It's like, no, you're using source control. Yeah, but no, I deleted that. It's like, no.
No, man.
It's like a layer.
Maybe with the cloud. Maybe with the advent of the cloud, more and more people realize that there's a cloud there.
Yeah.
They close their email. They know it's still there.
Which
they
by the way,
archive it. They know it's still there.
The trendy thing now is to just, in the middle of a meeting and somewhere, just scream, to the cloud! It's like, man, I think I have to go to the bathroom. To the cloud! You'll do it. Wait.
And Purell.
This developer's life.
Yes.
Talk to me.
Right. Okay. So I've got this other podcast that's called Hansel Minutes that is a really short to the point. Actually, someone on Twitter was really cool. They did a number of seconds until the content begins, and they checked all the different popular .NET podcasts about, like, you know, .NET Rocks, 2 minutes before they got to the point, 45 seconds. Before we get to the point on Hansel Minutes.
We need to improve.
I think it's been 45 seconds and he still hasn't made his point.
That's a very good point.
I think it's been 20 minutes and we haven't had content on the show.
That is true. Long story short, when I was young, I do this one podcast, highly dense technical content, very, very short, but not a lot of creativity there. It's mostly just kind of an interview show and we have a lot of fun with it. But Rob Connery started this thing, Digital Developers Life, and I joined about episode 2 or 3. This is moody, long-form storytelling. It's about technology from the perspective of how it affects our lives. So we had an episode on getting fired, on dealing with competition in the workplace, dealing with obsession and how you work through issues of obsession. And this one here was called Audacity. So we've got John Resig, we've got Alex Payne from Twitter, we've got Miguel de Acasa, and they're telling their stories, not about the technology, but about what it takes, what kind of audacity do you have to go and build a JavaScript library for the whole world to use and rewrite .NET from scratch without looking at the code. And Alex Payne left Twitter and has now decided to reboot banking. He's starting a new bank called Bank Simple. That takes some audacity, for lack of another word.
I love this. I fell in love with this developer's life.
Did you really?
Yeah, I really did.
That's
and
so
I started tweeting and telling all my friends about it because I think you guys just really strike a nice chord that's not being filled by any of the existing tech shows that are out there. I mean, these are life lessons that we all need to know. Like, how do you deal with a bad manager? How do you deal with, you know, managing your own career versus these
It's a good point. We tend to everyone tends to focus on the technical as opposed to this
the
is
soft
what happens.
Skills.
Yeah,
exactly.
Soft skills.
We had an episode that was actually our most popular one so far about disconnecting. Dealing with wives and girlfriends and spouses and husbands that just disconnect, guy. You know, we're not writing code, we're having dinner.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
How do you deal with that in your life? And then Rob Connery picks out this wonderful Creative Commons-based music that...
I love the music.
Really?
Some people don't.
Some people don't like
yeah,
the music.
I really do.
But this is very long. This is a commute. Think about something. If you have an hour-long commute, join us. Handsome Minutes, Short and to the Sweet. This Developer's Life, never get to the point.
And... NuGet? Is it supported?
I'm going to put it in NuGet.
All right.
I want to know, we need to write down how many times we said NuGet in this show about NuGet.
Yeah.
So that when we can have a little thing that says, like, number of
times
said
Scott's Candy Counter.
Yeah, actually, if we could force them to count
words, that'd
be great.
Because it's on my commitments at Microsoft. I'm having mid-year reviews soon, so I need to have sure that...
We are. Actually, we should have an honest conversation about mid-year reviews. Like, would people care?
Let's do a show, reviews.
Yeah, sure.
There should be.
This is the show.
I think so, in all seriousness.
Awesome.
I'll give you my 2 cents.
Let's do it. We'll call.
So my pick of the week is a new show that just launched today, or at least when we're filming today, Larry Larson and Gove Maharajov. So Gove is very well known inside Microsoft. A lot of people don't know him.
Dude is a legend.
Yes. So you were saying earlier on the Win7...
Yeah, so there's this internal mailing list, Win7 Technical Discussions, and whenever you have anything wrong, you usually write... an internal email, which is a little snarkier, you know, was doing something about blue screen, da-da-da-da-da. And the guy who always answers is this guy, is Gove.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've been here 3 years. I've never seen the guy until just this moment. Now he says, you know, he should be a legend outside of Microsoft. He knows everything. He's helped me debug obscure USB printer driver errors and pre-beta versions of Windows 7. He knows about device drivers. He knows about what button to push. Amazing guy.
Yeah, he's one of those people that I think everybody inside Microsoft knows him from email aliases and his response and just his ability to just his massive knowledge library in his brain.
So Defrag is a show featuring him? Is that the idea? Or will you rotate guests?
Well, the reason I want to bring up Gove is, one, it's kind of showcasing, you know, the people inside Microsoft that you know, us, we get all the Gove love, right? As Scott was mentioning, he has an issue. Now this show kind of gives you the things that Gove would do to figure out, say, issues. Why is your machine starting up slow? Or a way to ask questions to somebody like Gove.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who helps thousands of us internally. Now hopefully he'll help millions of people externally.
Exactly.
So we're going to amplify his reach, but not just a tech thing like, you know, go to the start menu and type ipconfig release. This guy will do the CSI. Right?
Yeah,
why
exactly.
Why did this happen? What exactly? Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, here are the things to look at. So, man, if your machine can't boot, what do you do? Like besides panic, you can't search the web, your machine doesn't boot. What are the things to do? And you should probably watch this episode before it can't
before
boot.
It crashes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good. We've got to get you to the airport, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.